Elmhurst Public Library, this is Storytime for Grown-Ups. I am Margie Kohlbacher. Welcome to Episode 2. Stories have the power to inspire and change us. Being read to stimulates our brains, expands our imaginations, and is just plain fun. You're in for some fun in this episode as we explore local talent. Today's first piece is called Yellow Panties, written by Duard Mosley. Duard is an author, actor, and library colleague. He's also written several plays produced in Chicago and the western suburbs. Our second short story is titled James's Arrival by Paul Heinz. Paul is an award-winning author, musician, and composer from right here in our very own Elmhurst. Sit back, listen, and enjoy.
Yellow Panties by Duard Mosley. Mark dumped his clothes onto his bed. Underneath his gray boxer briefs, he spied a splash of yellow. It was a pair of women's underwear. He picked them up. Silky, very smooth. Susan, who lived in 2D, had used the dryer just before him. What to do? Go knock on her door and hand her the underwear? He hung the panties on his dresser mirror. When Mark woke the next morning, the first thing he saw were the yellow panties. They seemed to glow in the bright morning sun. He carried them to the bathroom. As he toweled off, he looked at the panties tantalizingly spread out across the vanity top. He touched them. Smooth, cool, and erotic. I wonder. He put them on. The fit was snug, but he liked the feel against his skin. Maybe he'd wear them. Why not? No one would see them. He wasn't going to the gym today. Yes, why not? He was about to open the door to leave when someone knocked on it. He opened it to see Susan, dressed in her gray business attire.
I hate to bother you, but I think you have something of mine.
Mark shifted on his feet. Oh?
Yes, it's a bit... Well, you have my underwear.
I don't understand, he said.
I left them in the dryer. I saw you putting your clothes in after I took mine out. The dryer was empty when I went back to look for them.
What do they look like? He asked.
Yellow silk. Not something most men wear.
What did she mean by most men? No, I didn't see them, he said.
I wouldn't bother, but they were very expensive. A present from my fiancé.
Well, congratulations. When's the big day?
Susan grimaced and stared hard into his eyes.
Look, I know you have them.
Hey, if I had them, I'd give them right back. What use would I have? I don't have a fiancé, she snorted.
I can see why.
What's that mean?
Who would marry a thief?
Do you want to come in and search the place?
Yes, I do.
He hadn't expected that. Well, okay, but not now. I have to get to work.
And have time to hide them, she asked.
All right. If you insist, search away.
This won't take long, she said.
Mark led Susan to his bedroom and opened the drawers to his dresser. Without a hint of reserve, she dove right into every drawer, rummaging through his underwear, T-shirts, and socks.
How about the closet? She asked.
Sure, why not?
Mark slid open the closet door. Susan pulled storage boxes off the shelves and searched through piles of rarely worn Bermuda shorts, running shorts, and exercise tees.
Well, how about under the bed? He volunteered.
Susan got on her hands and knees and peered under his box spring.
See any underwear?
You really ought to vacuum under here. It's disgusting.
She tromped to the kitchen and opened every cabinet. She searched the microwave, the oven, the refrigerator, and the freezer compartment. Mark flung his briefcase onto the kitchen table and snapped it open.
You forgot to look in here.
Thanks, she said, and pulled all his papers out onto the table and ran her hands through the flaps and storage pockets.
Are you satisfied now?
Your pockets? She asked.
Mark emptied his pockets and pulled them inside out. Susan stared at Mark. Her eyes narrowed and she shook her head from side to side.
I've heard of men like you.
Men? Like me?
There's only one place my underwear can be.
Oh?
Keep them, she said, and stormed out, slamming the door behind her.
James's Arrival by Paul Hines. The word of James's upcoming arrival spread throughout the town of Clayton like a banquet buffet at our church's Saturday night social. I'd first heard about it from Susie Portman while walking to the comic book store one afternoon. I smiled my knowing smile at her because I remembered how I almost got to first base with her back in 02. She told me that James would be arriving at the Lake County Airport tomorrow. She had heard from Mrs. Danzy, who wears pigtails and works at the Dairy Queen on Sundays. I sometimes think about getting to first base with her, and even second and third, when I'm really thinking hard. But all she ever does when serving me a blizzard is smile and ask me how my mom is. Mrs. Danzy heard about James from Officer Glick, and I think he heard the news from Frank at the auto shop. Frank knows everything. He's like God or something. James arrived on a little puddle jumper piloted by none other than Bob Marley. I kid you not. His name is Bob Marley. But I don't know how he'd look in dreadlocks because he's bald. And it's hard to imagine hair on a bald man, just like it's hard to imagine a clean-shaven face on someone who's always had a beard. I mean, Osama bin Laden himself could probably walk up to me and share his beef jerky or something, and I wouldn't have a clue who he was if he'd shaved that morning. Whenever I run into Bob Marley at the diner, I say something in my best Jamaican accent like, "Yeah, man, let's get together and feel all right." I'm laughing just thinking about it. Bob doesn't usually laugh, though, but instead hits me on the shoulder with the force of a jackhammer and swears a string of profanities that would have Pastor Schmidt spinning in his grave if he were dead. He's funny, that Bob. Turns out, just about the whole town of Clayton showed up for James's homecoming. There were balloons and streamers, a fun-sized version of the high school band, a large banner that read, "Welcome home, James. Thank you for your service." Photographers, and a microphone so that James could answer questions for the local newspaper. James stood in front of the audience like a petrified tree, hands in pockets, a stone-cold expression on his face, and responded in short, curt sentences. Afterwards, he did his best Elvis Presley impression and said to the crowd,
"Thank you. Thank you very much."
Except he had substituted the F word for thank, which made his impression of the king come off a bit harsher than most I'd seen. Some of the people seemed taken aback, but I frankly was surprised it had taken him that long. Good old James. He's always been a master at using the F word in innovative ways. That Sunday, after his return home, I knocked on his door. His house was sort of hidden by a forest that led to a nearby lake. I waited for a while, and Mr. Roberts finally came and told me to please go away because James was officially grounded for the stunt he had pulled at the city's welcome celebration. "But isn't James like 20 or something? Hasn't he been serving our country in a desert?"
"Jerry, that don't mean shit in my house. He's grounded. Come back next week."
Well, there wasn't much else to do. I was so looking forward to James coming back that it was practically all I'd thought about for the last couple of years. His arrival was supposed to build up to something, but it hadn't really built up to anything at all. I mean, his Elvis impression was okay, I guess, but still. So, in between The Price is Right in the morning and Three's Company reruns in the afternoon, I started shooting hoops at home. I used to go to the park where the guys play pickup basketball, but they never let me play. It was their loss, really, because I was making some serious shots in my driveway. After mastering my left-handed hook, I tried doing little tricks like scoring from behind the basket and facing my back to the hoop and lobbing the ball over my head backwards.
I went to the Dairy Queen again one afternoon, hoping to see Mrs. Danzy, but she wasn't there. I did see Susie, however, eating a banana split with somebody I didn't know, and I sat down across from her and said hi.
"Jerry, what do you want?"
"I want to know who your friend is."
"She's not interested. Go away."
"Not interested in what? I just want to know who she is."
"I'm Pam."
"Hi, Pam."
"Jerry, you try groping her like you tried with me that one time, and you'll be wearing my banana split."
Well, that sounded like a win-win to me. I reached over and grabbed Pam's left breast, and sure enough, Susie slammed her banana split in my face. I was able to lift up my shirt and catch most of it, and after I found an unused plastic spoon on an empty table, I downed the ice cream without too much trouble. All in all, it was a pretty good afternoon, and I finally got to second base. I'd have to write that down in my spiral notebook of accomplishments, right after my entry of making a left-handed layup. Blindfolded. I finally saw James a day later when I was riding my skateboard downtown. He was wearing army fatigues, a black t-shirt, and these big leather boots that seemed more suited for hiking in the Alps than for walking down Main Street in July.
"James, they finally let you out."
"Go hump yourself, Jerry. I'm busy."
"How do you like being back?"
He didn't answer, so I asked, "What are you going to do now?"
"I think I'll start beating you, silly fat ass."
James liked to say things like that, but it never really came down to nothing. Well, except for the time he shoved me off my bicycle one time, and I went to the hospital with a concussion. That was a good one.
"James, I want to talk to you about the war and all. You got some good stories?"
"Stories you wouldn't believe. Not in a million years."
"That's what I'm talking about. Did you see any action?"
He rubbed his hands through his buzz cut. "Tons of it."
"Wow. Did it make the guys there pissed? I hear they're pretty protective of their women."
James gaped at me and sort of winced. I thought maybe he was having a flashback or something.
"I saw action, dumbass. Guns. Bombs. Killing. I wasn't fucking around with their women, jerk off."
"Oh, well, I thought that on leave they might have some honeys waiting for you, ready and willing."
"You are a complete moron. Go away."
"I'll try to stop by tomorrow, and you can tell me some of your war stories. I'll bring you along some chips or something."
"I'm busy tomorrow."
"Okay, I'll try stopping by anyhow. You know, probably not more than a couple of times." James rolled his eyes and walked down the street like he was looking to score, kind of strutting and holding out his chest. I had figured he had gotten laid all the time in Iraq, but now I wondered if he was ornery because it had been such a long time. Maybe I could introduce him to Pam, and I could give him a first-hand account of how nice her breasts are. Well, her left breast, anyhow. When I stopped by his house for the third time the next day, I'd already finished most of the bag of Doritos I'd purchased at the Quick Mart. I rang the doorbell with my Cool Ranch seasoned fingers, and James came to the screen door.
"What do you want? Can't you see I've been home all day, but not answering the door?"
"Yeah. You know, sometimes when the phone rings, I don't even get up. I just let it keep ringing until the machine gets it."
James didn't say anything. I could smell his body odor from where I was standing. He must have gotten used to not showering in the desert, what with it being a desert and all.
"I got some Doritos, something to munch on while you tell me war stories."
"I'm not going to tell you war stories."
"Don't want to talk about it, huh?"
"Yeah, I remember my granddad was in the Korean War, and he didn't talk about it either for a long time. I think until after he died, actually, because of all the bad stuff he saw. War really changes you, I guess."
"It didn't change me."
"I don't know, James. You got that faraway look in your eyes, like you're thinking about hurting someone, you know?"
James walked out onto the narrow wooden porch and let the screen door slam behind him. He was still wearing his big boots.
"Jerry, do you remember what I was like before I left for the Army?"
"Sure I do. You and I did all sorts of stuff together."
"Mm-hmm. Do you recall who duct-taped your butt cheeks together?"
"Well, of course I did. You don't forget a thing like that."
And who pushed you off the bleachers during the football game?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that one.
And who took pot shots at you with a paint gun while you mowed your lawn?
Uh-huh.
Well, what do you think about someone who did all those things? I mean, what would you call him?
I could see where he was going with this. I didn't expect him to get all emotional and all, but I guess war puts things into perspective sometimes. It must have been really tough for him.
I'm still your friend, James. I was your friend then, and I'm your friend now. And I don't care how many Arabs you shot or how many times you were scared and all, nothing's going to change that. This whole town thinks I'm some kind of war hero.
Well, you are, ain't you, James?
He stood up abruptly and pushed me back off the porch. I remember my feet sort of flying through the air and me seeing the sky for a moment. The tree branches looked like little fingers, and I must have blacked out then because I came to in the hospital, just as a real sweetie of a nurse was walking in.
How are you feeling, honey?
My head kind of hurts.
Well, it should. You landed hard on a rock.
I remembered falling and wished that James had pushed me toward the petunia garden instead.
Where's James? James Roberts? The one who pushed you?
Uh-huh. The nurse nodded.
Don't you worry about James. Officer Gluck's got him in jail for the night. Probably post bail tomorrow, but you'll be all right.
In jail? What in God's name for?
Well, honey, she sat on my bed and I peeked down her nurse's uniform. Her breasts were a little on the small side, but real nice just the same.
Because he tried to kill you.
Ma'am, I don't know what you're talking about. James pushed me off the porch.
And then went into his house and got a knife. His father arrived home just as James was about to stab you.
I must have looked confused because she put her hand through my hair, careful to avoid the bandages, and then walked away. My head hurt real bad. I tried picturing it, James in his T-shirt, bending over my unconscious body with a knife. I wondered how long James would be in jail for this. It would probably be a while. And I thought about how I could visit him in the jail cell and listen to his war stories. And I could bring a care package if the warden let me. And we'd munch on some chips and talk about Iraq. Or I might even help him plan his escape. I'd get him a poster of Rita Hayworth, like in that movie, only maybe the warden would have already seen that movie, so we'd have to come up with a different plan. Well, I could hardly stand the weeks that followed. It was just like before James's arrival, only now there was nothing to look forward to except seeing Mrs. Danzy at the Dairy Queen. I was really feeling down. I didn't even say anything to Bob Marley when I saw him at the drugstore. I think he was looking for me to ask him if he shot the sheriff or something, but I just didn't feel up to it. A few weeks after I got back home from the hospital, Mr. Roberts stopped by my home while I was shooting hoops. Even that had gotten old, so I'd started taking shots while riding my skateboard. I sort of froze when I spotted him on the driveway. I thought maybe he was going to shout at me or something.
Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Mr. Roberts.
You still practicing your shot, huh?
Yeah.
I don't suppose there are too many teams with a skateboarding guard.
I think he was trying to be funny because he knew that I only played forward. So I laughed.
You know, Jerry, I'm real sorry about what happened. I can't explain what went on in James's head.
Oh, that's all right. He didn't mean nothing by it. I went on to tell him my plan to keep James company in jail, but I left out the part about me helping him escape. The fewer people who knew about that, the better. Mr. Roberts put his hands in his pockets and looked down for a moment.
Jerry, I don't think they'll allow visitors where James is going. He's going to spend some time in a mental hospital. The government has a program to help. It's going to be a long while until you see him again.
Well, if that didn't make me feel even worse. I rubbed my nose because it itched. And then
all of a sudden, I felt kind of teary-eyed, and I started crying right there in front of Mr. Roberts. For a minute there, I thought he was going to hug me, but he didn't. When I settled down, he asked, "Jerry, you like American Idol?" I said I didn't, but that I liked watching reruns of old shows on Nickelodeon.
"Well, come on over to the house sometime, and we can watch some TV together."
"Really?"
"Yeah, I'd like that."
"Okay, I can bring along some chips or something to munch on. Andy Griffith is on in the evenings. That's a good one." Mr. Roberts just smiled and turned to walk away. "Hey, Mr. Roberts," he stopped and looked back at me. "You don't suppose James will mind if you and I hang out, do you?"
"No, I don't think so," he said. And I watched him walk away.
I felt good about his answer, because I didn't want James mad at me when he came back.
Thank you for listening today. Be sure to join us for our next episode of Mind Expanding Tales.
Storytime for Grownups is recorded at Elmhurst Public Library's Creative Studio Lab. Our director and editor is Josh Jers, our producer and host is Margie Kohlwacher, and our stories today were narrated by Duard Mosley. Works read in this podcast may be protected under copyright law. These podcasts are reserved for the education of library patrons only. Elmhurst Public Library receives no commercial gain from these recordings. No unauthorized further dissemination of these works is permitted.